Northampton Colwell, Sunday the 9th of September 2007, 26th of Elul, Kafar Elul, Toshin, Samach, Zion. We're on Tehillim Perek Yud Aleph, and this is the second half of the chapter. Hopefully we'll finish the chapter today. What I'll do is, I'll just go from the beginning of the chapter with one extra thing to say on the Pesukim. We've done the first three Pesukim already. Lamasech LeDavid, Lamasech LeDavid, song to David. Bashem Chosisi, I've trusted in God. Eich Tomu Lenashi, how can you say to my soul, Nudi Hachem Tzipper, flee you mountain, Tzipper, sorry, flee, flee to your mountain, thank you, Tzipper, O you bird. Yeah. Now, something which I haven't seen, but my son, Yaakov Chaim, who is very keen that they're keen to contribute to the shit, he found for me that he found a pirush of the Sephoronu on Tehillim. I've never seen it yet. And apparently the Sephoronu learns this whole chapter is all about David's war against Avshalom, or maybe we should say Avshalom's war against David and how David had to run away. And he learns, and the Sephoronu learns on this pasuk that Bashem Chosisi, the phrase Bashem Chosisi, I've trusted in God, that ties in with Pesukim in, he refers many Pesukim from this chapter, he connects them to the Pesukim in Shmuel Beis, which concern the story of Avshalom. So here, Bashem Chosisi, David says, I trusted in God, and he relates that to the Pesuk in Shmuel Beis, chapter Tezayin, Pesuk Yud Beis, where David says, Ulai Yireh Hashem Be'eini, maybe Hashem will see in my eyes, meaning he'll see the tears of my eyes. And Hashem will repay me with good instead of his curse. This is the curse by Shimi ben Gera. David HaMelech ran away from Yerushalayim. He was running away from Avshalom. And when he was running away, he met Shimi ben Gera, who of course belonged to Shaul's camp and was very much against David. And Shimi ben Gera cursed David at that time. So, and of course, Yoav wanted to kill Shimi ben Gera straight away. He said, so I wanted to kill him. And David said, no, don't kill him. And he said, Hashem hopefully will see the tears in my eyes and he'll pay me good instead of bad. Well, that's connected to this war with Avshalom, because he was running away from Avshalom, running out of Yerushalayim at the time. So that's expressed in our pasuk as Bashem Chosisi, I trusted in Hashem. Likewise, Nudi Hachem Tzipper, flee you old bird, or flee you bird to your mountain, and that says he connects that to chapter Yud Zayin, again in Shmuel Beis, chapter Yud Zayin, Pasuk Tes Zayin, where there the pasuk says Ve'atza, and now sorry, let's take the second half of the pasuk. Yes, Ve'gam Aver Ta'aver, this was Hushai. Yes, it's Hushai talking and giving a message. That's why it's Hushai Ha'arki, who is on David's side. He was a secret spy, spying for David. Excuse me. And he's passing a message to David. And the message to David is, V'gam aver ta'aver, just run. Run away. Hushai Ha'arki by then had discovered that Ahithophel's plan was to attack there and then. So he passes his message to David, just run for your life. And that's V'gam aver ta'aver, is crossover and crossover yet more. And that's related in our pasuk to Nudi Harchen Tzipper. Run away, you bird. So again, this is how the Sephoronu relates it all to the story of Avshalom. Pasuk Beis, we've done the pasuk before. I'm just going through these first three pasukim again with the extra pirush of the Sephoronu. Kinei harishon yidruchun keshes, behold, the Rishonim steady the bow by stepping on it. We mentioned that it was the long bow which you can steady with your foot. Konenu chitzam al yaseh, they position the arrow on the bowstring. Liros, to fire the arrow, Bemo Ophel, in the darkness, Liishalev, against those who are straight at heart. So the Sephoronu, who learns this whole chapter, is all about David running away from Avshalom and the whole war against Avshalom. He relates that to the Pasuk in chapter Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, in Shmuel Beis, where Ahithophel says to Avshalom, I've got a plan. Here's my plan to attack David. And my plan is, attack him now. David, if we catch him now, he's on the run, he's very weak, let's attack, and let's attack immediately. Let me choose 12,000 men. V'akuma, and let me get up. V'eredefah, and let me chase achari David, after David. And here's the key word, haloila, tonight. I'm doing it right, let's attack him right now. So the Sephrona learns, our pasuk says, they wanted to fire arrows, but mil ofel, shoot arrows. We had this all last time, didn't we? Yeah, I know. Shoot arrows, thank you. Liris, but mil ofel, to shoot arrows, but mil ofel, in the dark. And that's related to this plan of Achisophel to attack David now, haloila, at night. Catch David unawares, to attack him at night. Of course, in the event...
So you wouldn't expect an attack at night.
That's right. And to attack straight away. Yeah. And to attack now, at night. And in the event, he never did it.
Yeah.
Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu managed to frustrate the plans of Achisophel. And that's now, that's in the next pasuk. Ki hashasos yeheros yehoresun. The foundations are crumbled or are demolished. Tzadik ma'po'ol, what has the tzadik done? And the Sephrona learns on this pasuk that this is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu crumbling the plan of Achisophel. Achisophel was the
uncle of
Bathsheba. Great grandfather of Bathsheba, I think. Yes.
He already had Shlomo, I remember.
And that he was an ancestor.
It seems strange that he still was an enemy of David when he turned the grandson.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The fact that Achisophel joined Avshalom's army is phenomenal. Bearing in mind what a great Talmud Chacham he was. Absolutely. Now, in the pasuk says. Now I've lost it. Never mind. Okay. The pasuk says, and it's there in this chapter, I think, in chapter Yud Zayin in Shmuel Beis, that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu who engineered Avshalom to go for Hushai HaArki's advice rather than Achisophel's advice. Naturally, he would have followed Achisophel's advice. Achisophel is a brilliant man, and Avshalom should surely have followed his advice. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineered it that Avshalom should fall for Hushai HaArki's advice. Hushai HaArki was a secret spy. He double-crossed Avshalom, pretending to be on Avshalom's side, really being on David's side, gave a piece of advice to Avshalom which was not so good, and in the hope that Avshalom would fall for it, and he did fall for it. And that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineering, ki hashasos yehoresun. The foundations are demolished. The foundations, the very firm foundations of Achisophel's advice, are demolished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu by making Avshalom fall for Hushai HaArki's advice. Okay. That brings us up to where we were, which is Pasuk Dalet. That's where we're up to now. So, Yud Aleph, Pasuk Dalet. Hashem Beheichal Kodesho. Hashem is in his holy temple, his temple of holiness. Hashem Bashamayim Kiso. Hashem's throne is in heaven. Enov Yechezu, his eyes can see. Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Odom, his Afapov, we can assume his eyelids, most professional learning to mean the eyelids. Yivchanu Bnei Odom, they try mankind or they test mankind. And here we have the response to the earlier part of the chapter. Till now we've been speaking about David's bemoaning, how can he have tzaddik veralo, he's a tzaddik, how can HaKadosh Baruch Hu do about him? And now we have the turning point. This is brought in the Sefer of the Masad Rav Kook on Tehillim. From this pasuk onwards is a bit of a turning point to explain how HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is on the side of the tzaddik, even if we don't necessarily notice it. Right. Hashem Heichal Kodesho. This, we're going to need this. Right. Hashem Heichal Kodesho. So, the Rashi and the Radak both comment, Hashem Heichal Kodesho, Hashem is in his holy temple, and he's Hashem Hashem Kisto, his throne is in heaven. But, and here's the big but, Enov Yechezu, his eyes see. You might think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is far away, he's removed from everything, and he doesn't know what's going on. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees absolutely everything, and the Rosha will not get away with being a Rosha. Enov Yechezu, his eyes see. There's an interesting piece of Targum on this pasuk. Hashem Beheichal Kodesho is translated in the Targum as Hashem Beheichlo de Kudshe. That's not surprising. Hashem is in his holy temple. The next part is a little bit strange. And I don't have an answer for this. The pasuk reads, Hashem Bashamayim Kiso, Hashem's throne, his throne is in heaven. But that name of Hashem is translated in the Targum not as Hashem, Yudke Bovke, but as Eloka. It's unusual. Why should the Targum, who translates, translates the word Hashem at the beginning of the pasuk as Hashem, yet here, Hashem Bashamayim Kiso, he translates that name of Hashem, it is Yudke Bovke in the Hebrew, but he translates it as Eloka, which is another expression. Why change? And I don't know. Eloka Vishmi Moroma Kurise. Hashem's throne is in the heavens, in the high heavens. Well, why change from Yudke Vovke to Eloka? I don't know.
It's a sting, isn't it?
It is, exactly.
It's opposite.
Yeah. Why put it in this sitting? I don't know. I mean, why change it? Yeah. The question really is, why change from Yudke Vovke in the Pasuk? And they have exactly the same thing later on in Pasuk Hey, which starts Hashem Tzadik Yivchon. Hashem tests the Tzadik, and he translates that name of Hashem as Eloka. Again, a change, and I don't know why. Don't know why that is. Okay, here we come to the phrase Af Apov Yivchanu Bnei Odom. Now, what is the definition of Af Apov or Af Apayim? So the Metzudas Tzion seems to be the only one who holds that it means the pupil of the eye.
Yes.
Yeah, pupil of the eye. Whereas in fact others learn it's, and most of the freshmen learn it's the eyelids. It's the eyelids. Af Apov. Why exactly does it mean eyelids? Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch says it comes, Af Apov comes from the root Ayin Vav Fei, as in the word oaf, a bird. And Ayin Vav Fei as a root means to fly. He says that's exactly what the eyelids do. They're fluttering the whole time. The eyelids are popping up and down the whole time. This is it. They're flying. So it's part of the body that's in constant movement and flying. And therefore that's why the eyelids are called Af Apov. Interesting. That's how Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch lands. The Tosfos read on this pasuk of Einov Yechazu, Hashem's eyes see. But what will Hashem's eyes see? Says the Tosfos read Elboni. Says David, Hashem's eyes will see my elbow, downcast status. I'm on the run, I'm in trouble, people are against me, and that's
wretched state.
Thank you, El Boni. Hashem will see my wretched state. Now, the Medrash Sheikh Hatov gives a very nice pshat on this passage. We have two expressions here for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number one, Hashem Heichal Kodesh, God is in his holy temple. And number two, Hashem Bashamayim Kiso, Hashem is in his throne, is in heaven. Well, which is it? Is he in his holy temple, i.e. the Beis Mikdash, or is he in, or is he on high in his throne, in his celestial throne? Which is it? Says the Medrash Hakatov, it depends. We refer here to two different times in the history of Klal Yisrael. At a time when Klal Yisrael osin ritzono shamokam, when they do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Klal Yisrael are behaving themselves, then Hashem Heichal Kodesho, Hashem rests his Shekhinah down here on earth to be much closer to us than he's in his holy temple. But bizman she'in ritzono shamokam, when Klal Yisrael don't listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then he recedes away from us when he goes up to his celestial heavens, and that's when Bashamayim Kiso, his throne is in the heaven, and his presence on earth is not felt quite so easily.
That's when it refers to Midas Hadin, he changes by
So with that we can answer the Targum, why change their locker, because that's a bad time. Wonderful, Shkech, thank you very much. In case it didn't come out on the tape, because the microphone's here, I'm going to say it again. So Dr. Shapiro is telling us, thank you, that could explain the Targum, why the Targum changes their locker, Midas Hadin, because that's referring to at a time when Klal Yisrael are not Osim Yisrael Shemok and not listening to Targum Shemok. Shkech, you made my day. The Medrash Sheikh Hatov gives another pshat in the name of Rav Acho, that really the Shekhinah never has left. The Shekhinah has never ever left us, particularly not, says Rav Acho, from the coastal Maravi. And that we know from the Pasuk in Shashirim, where the Pasuk says in Shashirim, it's chapter base, Pasuk Tess. Hinezeh Omeda Hakosleinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands behind our wall, and the Medrash on that Pasuk refers it to the coastal Maravi, that yes, the Shekhinah may well have left, but it's never left the coastal, and never will ever leave the coastal Maravi. Shekhinah is always there. It's Rabbi Lozer in that Medrash Hakatov says that the Shekhinah never left. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina has never left anything of the Har HaBayis, even after Chum Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because we say that Hashem Beheichal Kodesho, Hashem is still in his holy temple, even when simultaneously with Hashem Hashemayim Kiso, even when his throne is up in heaven, his presence, his Shechina, is still here on little planet Earth. And Rabbi Yannai in the Medrash Shechetot gives a very lovely moshel. He says we have a moshel of a king. He's sitting in his hallway or in his throne room, and of course the king, the human king, hasn't got a clue what's going on in a little room in the palace. He's in his throne room. He doesn't know what's going on elsewhere. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not like that. No, even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bashamayim Kiso, even when his throne is in heaven and he's up there in heaven, nevertheless, Einov Yechazu, his eyes see absolutely everything. On the last part of the pasuk, Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Odom, the Yalkut Shimoni says this is a reference to something nice and topical as we approach Rosh Hashanah, and that's a reference to the Akedah. V'Halikim Nisayis Avraham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested Avraham, and that's Yivchanu Bnei Odom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu testing mankind, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests us. The Alshich and also the Malbim, very typical this I think for the Malbim, breaks the pasuk up into two sections. And he says as follows, Hashem Beheichal Kodesho, Hashem is in his holy temple, that goes together with the phrase, Einov Yechazu, his eyes will see. Why? Because when he's down on earth, Hey Beheichal Kodesho, in the holy temple on earth, Einov Yechazu, then he's very close to us, and directly his eyes can see exactly what's going on. Whereas the other phrase, Hashem Bashamam Kisso, Hashem's throne is in heaven, that goes together with the phrase Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Adam, his eyelids can test mankind. Why? Because eyelids, by the very nature of the eyelids, they usually open, but they sometimes close. So when they close, there's a momentary lapse of vision. And that momentary lapse of vision ties in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Bashamayim Kiso, his throne is up on heaven, where we don't quite sense his presence as well as we do as when he's on earth. When he's on earth, Einov Yechazu, he can see all the time. Sure, he sees everything, for sure, but we don't sense it. It's the way we sense it. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is not felt on earth, then we perceive that Hashem is not watching us quite all the time. Of course he is, but we perceive that he isn't. And that goes together with Afapov. Yeah? It appears to us as though he can't see us so well. And that's why, so really the whole pasuk is a parallelism. It comes in two halves. Hashem Heichal Kodesho marries up with Einov Yechazu, and Hashem Bashamayim Kiso marries up with Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Adam. That's brought both by the Alshich and also by the Malbim. The Yalkut Me'amloiz says...
It might appear he doesn't notice us when he's in heaven.
That's right. He is. Of course he is. But it appears to us like afapayim. It appears to us like eyelids, yeah, which don't quite see all the time. Yeah, that's how it appears to us. And the Yalkut Me'amloiz says something very similar. He says that Einov Yechazu is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu knowing all revealed things. Einov Yechazu, he sees everything that's revealed. And Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Adam means HaKadosh Baruch Hu can also see things which are hidden from us. Like the eyelids, when we have, due to our eyelids, things are sometimes hidden from us, but no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees even those things. And he relates it to a pasuk which we just learned yesterday, Hanistaros La'ashem Elokeinu, the hidden things, those belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even the hidden things, that's the point, even the hidden things are noticed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that relates to this phrase, Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Adam. It's nice to relate it, it's nice and topical.
Paniglos
Lanan Vaninu.
Niklos has a Gershayim on it,
yeah,
which is also a pausal.
Yes.
Note, like secondary to a Vestafa. So it's Niklos and his story.
Oh, you
don't. We don't understand. Even the things.
Even
that
the Niklos.
The things we don't understand. So what is left? Ma Lanu Vaninu. How does the puzzle go?
Lanu Vaninu. Nasus.
We don't understand the hidden things, we don't understand the revealed things. So what is there for us to do? Keep the Torah.
Nothing else. Because you can't hope to understand.
You can't understand.
Even
there are people who see things with their eyes, never in our lifetime, and can't believe what they've seen.
Yeah. Oh. Good. Yeah. The Yalkut Memnoiz goes on to say that Afapov Yivchanu Bnei Adam, that Hashem treats us as though he's got Afapayim, as though he's got eyelids. In other words, occasionally he will treat us with Hestapanim. He views that he sees us, of course, all the time, but he's removed from us, and it's as though he does not see us. He allows us to believe that he cannot see. And that's a very important part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's running of the world. Says the Yalkut Memnoiz, we human beings must have Bechira. We must at all times be able to choose between good and bad. Now, if any time a person does something bad, there is instant retribution, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sort of bolt of lightning instantly, that will remove our Bechira. Because we'll have no choice. We would never do any Averis again, because we know there is an immediate punishment, and we would never have any Bechira. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have that Bechira. Therefore, says the Yalkut Memnoiz, we need this attitude, this midah of Hashem of Afapov, of eyelids, which give us the illusion that he's not always watching us. Therefore, we might think we can get away with an Avera. Therefore, we have a real challenge on our hands. And therefore, if we choose correctly, Hashem will reward us. Therefore, we have a real, genuine Bechira. But we must have Bechira at all times. That's an axiom of Yiddishkeit, that we have Bechira to choose between good and bad. The Masad Rav Kook, on this Lashon of Afapayim, he said, he brings a pasuk in Yiriya, and it's chapter 10, pasuk with Zayin. Where the word Afapenu must surely be a reference to eyes, not eyelids, but the eyes themselves. And we already saw there's a bit of a machlokes how to learn it. The Mitzvah Tzion defined it as the pupil of the eye, because the pasuk there says, and I don't know the pasuk in context, they say Radna Einenu Dima, our eyes will drop tears, V'Afapenu Yizlumoyim, and our Afapayim, whatever those are. Same idea, use lumoin, drip water. The pasuk again is a parallelism, it's got these two parallels. But clearly, afapenu, it can't be the eyelids, because the eyelids don't drop the water, it's the eye that drops the water. So therefore, the Masad Rav Kook brings this as a support to say that afapayim can well be a reference to eyes and not to eyelids. But at any rate, we saw it's a bit of a machlokes how to learn it. Could be either.
Neither
drop
the water, it's the tear duct.
The tear duct. Well, it's more in the eye than the eyelid, surely.
Where are the tear ducts situated? In the eye hole?
Or
here.
The tape can't see where you're pointing.
Under, yeah.
In the eyelid?
Under the eyelid, yes.
Under the eyelid, it's a tear duct. Good.
Reticulophase.
Yeah, we're still going to go on there. Good. One second. Yeah. Good. Okay, Pasuk, hey. Hashem tzaddik yivchon, Hashem tests the tzaddik, v'rasha v'ohiv chamos sona anafsho, but the rasha and he who loves chamos is theft or violence, it can be neither really, sona anafsho, his soul hates. So basically Hashem tests the tzaddik, but the rasha is an object of his hatred. Hashem hates that rasha. Please note there's an esnachta under the word chamos, but that esnachta seems not to be a pause. We remember that the notes in Sefer Tehillim are totally different, and the phrasing is Hashem tzaddik yivchon, comma, the rasha v'ev chamos sona nafsho, and Hashem hates the rasha and he who loves violence, or he who loves crime. The vav on the word verosha is, of course, there's a vav hanigud. I was so pleased to see that phrase in Hebrew, vav hanigud. I always knew it as a disjunctive vav. It doesn't mean and, it means but. Hashem tests the tzaddik, but he hates the rasha. So, and I saw it, I wish I would have written down vav hanigud, because that's the correct term for it in Hebrew. Now, Rashi learns on this verse, Hashem Tzadik Yivchan, Hashem test the Tzadik. He quotes a Pasuk in Tehillim, chapter Ayin Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph, where the Pasuk there, where is it? Ayin Aleph, Yud Aleph. Yeah. Where he says, Ki Omru Ovai Li, my enemies say to me, or my enemies say about me, the Shemi Nashi and those who are watching me, they're watching my life, they want to chop me, Noatzi Yachtav, they all took advice together. What do my enemies say about me? Lamer is saying, Elohim Azodo, God has deserted him. This is David talking in later on in chapter Ayin Aleph. Ridfu, chase after him, Vesifsuhu, and grab him, Ki Ein Matzil, because there's no help for him. So, yeah, that's right. So David's Rashi connects our pasuk in Yud Aleph to this pasuk in Ayin Aleph, saying my enemies think that Kosh Baruch has deserted me. He says no, he hasn't deserted me. He's just testing me, and Kosh Baruch is testing me. That's not a desertion. He's not leaving me in the lurch. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is simply testing me, and never think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deserting a tzaddik. On the contrary, he's simply testing a tzaddik. Hashem tzaddik yivchon. Yeah. Good. And he says that's the whole point. That the Rashi goes on to quote a medrash, where the medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is particular to test a tzaddik more than a rasha. There's no point in testing a rasha. He won't respond to the test. Whereas a tzaddik comes under very close scrutiny of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests him very carefully. And this, Rashi brings it, and it really comes from a Medrash Rabbah. It's in Parshas Noach, Perek Lamed Beis Os Gimel, and it's also in the Medrash Rabbah in Noach, Parsha Lamed Dalet Os Beis. And there, we are given three different Mishalim. Rabbi Yonason starts off by talking about a potter, someone who is making pots and so on, and he wants to test that the pot is strong enough. So what does he do? He taps the pot. He'll tap whatever he's made. And he's not going to tap a pot that's weak, because it'll just crush. It'll crumble into nothing, and it'll smash it. The stronger pots, those are the ones that he tests really hard, and he'll give them a good beating, in order to test that they're really up to the required standard. So too is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He'll give a really strong test to a tzaddik. Hashem tzaddik yivchon. He's testing the tzaddikim. He's not interested in testing the shalom. There's no point. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is testing someone, that is the simon that that person is a tzaddik. We go on to another marshal.
We test him to give him rewards.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's the purpose of it.
Yeah, that's all purpose. Yeah, that is one purpose. We'll come to it. That's one purpose. Then the Medrash goes on with another marshal from Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina, very similar marshal, about a pishtoni, someone who's in the business of making flax. Now, to do this, I actually researched the whole flax making process, because there's a process called scutching, whereby they take the flax, a very small percentage of the original product is actually useful in flax making. Of course, they make what is flax? Oh, God, flax. I did all this research. My stomach just came out, and the internet came out. It's a plant, and it grows a bit like cotton, and we make linen from it. Bud, right? So the begotten of the Kohen Gadol and son of the Kohenim are made from linen, and linen tablecloths and so on. And it's made from, it's woven into thread, it's spun into thread, that from that which grows it's spun into thread, and then that thread is used for manufacturing, that's what we get linen from. So linen comes from the flax plant. We also get linseed oil, right? So you use it in your cricket mat, yeah? So you get linseed oil, it comes from the same plant, from flax. Now, part of the process is to weed out the bad quality flax and the good quality flax. And that's done by a process called scutching. The flax is soaked. Ideally, it's soaked in running water, but if not, it can be soaked in still water. Although, again, it gives off quite a bad smell.
Smell,
that.
Smell.
Oh, how do you know so much? I've been buying encyclopedias on this. I don't even smell like that. And it gives off quite a bad smell if it's left in still water, which is why it's better off if it's in running water. And then, at a later stage, it's beaten. The soaking process helps to separate the good from the bad, but then that process needs to be furthered by a process of beating, and it's beaten on a table, usually with a blunt knife or a blunt instrument. And that helps to part the fibres within the flax plant, and then the better ones are used and then they're combed out, and it looks very much like human hair when it's that thin, when it's combed out, and then it's woven together. So this is the process of the pishtoni, of the flax maker. What does he do? So this is Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina's moshel, that he'll beat the flax, but he's not going to beat poor quality flax that's just going to split. There's no point, it's useless, it's just thrown away anyway. So he'll only beat out the flax with the good potential in order to extract that which is really bad and get rid of that, leaving the best quality. And that's the moshel to Hashem, Takash Baruch Hu, testing the tzaddik. Again, you'll only bother testing something which has got good quality, something which has got great potential. And there's a third moshel brought by Rebbe Lezer, that if a person has a yoke to put on the animal, a very heavy yoke, and he's got a choice between two animals, which of his two animals will carry the yoke? Of course, the stronger one. There's no point in placing a heavy yoke on a weak animal, the animal will just collapse under the weight. So you place the heavy burden on the animal that can cope. Likewise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests the tzaddik, and only the tzaddik, no point in testing the rasha. And this, and the alshich on this pasuk, and also, not just the alshich, but also the netziv. And where is the Nativ? The Nativ is found in Bereishis chapter Kaf Beis Pasuk Aleph. They both question, well, why does this Medrash need to give us so many Mesholim? They're all these three Mesholim. We've got the Moshel of the guy of the potter, who tests the good quality pots, the flax maker, who only beats out the good quality flax, and the putting the yoke on the heavy animal only. Well, why do we need all three Mesholim? Won't one Moshel be enough? It'll come with the same message. What do we need them all for? So the Alshich and the Netziv both give a very similar answer. And the answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests a tzaddik for two different reasons. And this is what you were similar to what you're saying, Johnny. That reason number one is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to publicize the tzidkus of the tzaddik. He wants the world to know. So he'll put a tzaddik through his paces so that the tzaddik will pass, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can publicize what a great tzaddik this is. And that is closely related to what we said earlier, for Elokim Nisa es Avraham, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tested Avraham. That word Nisa means to test. But the Zohar in Parashas Toldos, and I haven't seen the Zohar, just so it quoted, says that V'alekim Nisa, that word Nisa has another meaning. The word Nis also means a banner. To publicize something. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to wave the flag over this tzaddik to publicize what a great tzaddik he is. So that is one of the two reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tests a tzaddik. And that is related, and there's a second reason for testing a tzaddik, and that's simply to make the tzaddik pass the test, to make the tzaddik better, a better person, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu can reward him more. So these mashalim in the Medrash relate to different aspects of the testing.
Why
do
you say that?
Benoni
as well.
Yeah, okay, Benoni will also be tested, but it's in contrast to the Rosha. Our pasuk speaks about the Rosha. The Rosha, for Rosha, Ve'ev Chomos, Son and Asha, Hashem is not going to test the Rosha. He's not interested in testing the Rosha. No point testing the Rosha. That's how Shem Shemfel Hirsch says it. There's no point in it. It's a waste of time. He's not going to pass. He's not interested anyway. He won't pick up on the message of the test. So the potter who tests his pots, he bangs on them. Banging on the pot does not improve the pot. Banging on the pot is an advertisement to the customer, look what a strong pot this is. And I'll give it a good bang, and I'll show you that it can cope with the bang. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu testing the tzaddik in order to wave the banner, the nace, over the tzaddik to publicize his tzidkus. Whereas the pishtoni, the flax maker, he is actually improving the quality of the flax by beating it out. Tapping the pot doesn't make the pot better. Hitting the flax makes the flax better. So we have two different aspects of a test for Makon Shpochu. One is to advertise the tzidkus of the tzaddik, and the other is to actually make the tzaddik into a better person so he can be more rewarded, more. What about the third one? The third moshel brought by Rebbe Lezer of putting the yoke only on the stronger animal. So that is explained that to see if the tzaddik is prepared to share someone else's burden. Will he share someone else's pain? Will he share someone else's burden? It's a heavy burden. Will he take someone else's burden as well? And I saw this in the Al-Sheikh, and I also saw it quoted on the website of Ken B'Yavne Yeshiva in the name of Rabbi Zachariah Tuvi. He's probably, must be one of the Magidei Sheir there, and he quoted this. I was very pleased to see it quoted both in the Mitziv and in the Al-Sheikh. Okay. Now, Son Anasho, our Pasuk speaks about the Rasha, the Ohiv Hamas, Son Anasho. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates the Rasha and the man who loves violence and who loves the theft. Son Anasho.
Does it mean the soul of God, or does it mean he hates the soul of the Rasha?
I think I've only seen one pshat. I'm not sure. So it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's soul hates the Rasha. The Rasha, the Ohiv Hamas, Son Anasho, Hashem's nefesh hates the Rasha and the Ohiv Hamas. I think that's the only pshat I've seen. Rashi learns, what's this Son Anasho? Hashem hates him in his heart or hates him in his soul. Says Rashi, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu stores up the punishments for the Rasha and for this Ohiv Hamas for afterlife, for Olam Haba, or for the Gehenna, we should say. For the Gehenna of the Rosh and the Gehenna of this Ohiv Hamas, Son Anasho, Hashem, he might allow the Rosh a good life in Olam Hazeh. Why? Because Son Anasho, Hashem, is storing up all those punishments for far later. The Radak says something very similar to what I mentioned earlier in the name of Rav Shmuel Ben Hirsch, namely that Hashem is only interested in testing the tzaddik. Why? Because by testing the tzaddik, he cleanses the tzaddik. Whatever punishments a tzaddik may require, he gets all those punishments in Olam Hazeh, and that's a cleansing process, leaving him with a clear slate in Olam Haba. Whereas the Rosh Hashanah is not going to pay any attention to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tests anyway, and he's not going to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's punishments, and so the Rosh Hashanah may well have a life of Riley here in Olam Hazeh and have a jolly good time here in Olam Hazeh, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is storing up all these punishments for later. The Yalkut Memnois points out a very nice idea. He says Hashem will hate the Rosh Hashanah even if he doesn't do anything. It's Ohev Hamas. The Rosh of Ohev Hamas, Son Anasho. Here we're talking about a Rosh who hasn't necessarily done anything. He's simply Ohev Hamas. He has a love of violence, or he has a love of theft. Hamas can also mean theft. So just that love of these evil things is enough to qualify him for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hatred. That's how the Yalkut Memnois puts it.
Just because he loves it, he loves it in the end.
Yes, just he loves through these bad things. He doesn't act on it. Just the love of these things is enough to qualify him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates such a person. He's gone too far with that. Exactly. Yeah. The Sephorno, who if you remember learns this whole chapter as a reference to the war against Avshalom, or Avshalom fighting David, he says that Hashem Tzadik Yivchan. He explains that the Dr. Melech says the time when I davened, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really watching me and studying me and scrutinizing me. Yivchan can mean to scrutinize. HaKadosh Baruch Hu scrutinized me at the time when I davened. And I davened for success against Avshalom, that we shouldn't come to any harm. That is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu scrutinized me. And of course, the Rosh Hashanah and the Ohiv Hamas in our pasuk has to be Achisofel. Achisofel, who advised, why is he a Rosh Hashanah? And why is he an Ohiv Hamas? So he says the Achisofel had gave Avshalom two pieces of advice. Advice number one was that he should have biyah with the pelagshim of his father David. And that was Akim. So he says, if you want to stamp your, if you want to make your mark that you are worthy of being a king, then you should sleep with the Pilakshim of David. And that will impress everybody. You know, that puts you into a position, that puts you into a royal position. And that qualified Achisophel as a Rasha. Oh, Evchomos, what made him in this one? Evchomos, a lover of violence? That was because he set the son against the father and he ended up with a war. And as a war is, of course, violence. And again, that was down to Achisophel. So Achisophel is the bad man in this passage. Rosh of Evchomos, he's a Rosh of advising Avshalom to sleep with the Pelagshim of David. And he's an Evchomos because he encouraged the battle between Avshalom and David.
He doesn't get Olam Habo, does he?
I believe not. Name. Yeah, his Olam Habo was lost. Hang on a second. Yeah, in the Medrash, Reb Shimon gives an interesting pshat on this word Yivchon. Hashem Tzadik Yivchon. What is the pshat in this word Yivchon? So he says the word Yivchon means strong. And he gets it from a posuk, and the posuk is in it's in Yeshaya, chapter Kafches, posuk Tezayin. Yeshaya Kafches Tezayin. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, where the pasuk says, Evan Bochan, Lachin Kama Hashem Elokim. So it says Hashem, Hineni Yisad B'Tzion Oven. I'm going to establish in Tzion a stone, what is this stone? It's Evan Bochan. It's a strong stone. Pinas Yikras. It's a cornerstone. Musod, very well established. Now this is a reference to Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He's described as this really strong stone. Rashi translates that word Eben Bochan as a strong stone. So here we have this word Hashem Tzadik Yivchon. Hashem tests the Tzadik. Ultimately that makes the Tzadik stronger. Then we have another Medrash that Hashem Tzadik Yivchon, that Hashem tests the tzaddik, related to the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Baloscha, Kaches HaLevim, take the Levim. Hashem is only prepared to take the Levim. Why? Because they passed the test that we're about to learn in Vezos HaBracha in a couple of weeks. Asher Nisi Seba Masa. They passed the test. The Shevet Levi who didn't serve the Egel, and Shevet Levi always rallied round the right, rallied round Moshe Rabbeinu at the time of times of difficulties and so on. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kaches HaLevim, that's Hashem Tzadik Yivchon. Hashem is only prepared to give a person gedula, like he gave the Levim, if they passed the tests. Good. And that's it for Pasuk Hey. Okay, Pasuk.
See if they're worthy of gedula.
Worthy of gedula, exactly, yeah, worthy of gedula, yeah. Okay, Pasuk Vav. Yam Tzera L'shoyim Pachim. Hashem should rain down on Rishayim Pachim, and we'll see what that is. Eish and fire, v'gofris and brimstone, we'll see what that is. V'ruach zilophos and burning wind, menoskosom shall be their portion. So here we have David HaMelech talking about the terrible punishments that are going to come upon the Rishayim. Now, first of all, let's get some of these words defined. Yam Tzera L'shoyim Pachim. Now, what Pachim is defined by most professionals, as charcoal. Yes, charcoal. Pechom. Pechami. I never chapped Pechom until I saw.
Pechami.
Oh, yes, Pechom is a blacksmith, of course. It's a pechom. That's brought in the sefer from Rav Kook, in the Masad Rav Kook. He compares this word pachim to the word pechom. He says a real plural of pechom would be pechomim, but here pachim is an abbreviated form of that plural. Pechom. Pachim.
Is it a little crucible?
Yeah, but that's not necessarily. Oh, so it's just when you burn things. Oh,
pachim. Charcoal is formed in
it. It's formed in there, by burning coal. Mm-hmm. Charcoal is from burning coal?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Wood. Or wood.
Burning wood, yeah.
In the absence of oxygen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absence of oxygen. Oh, that's what happened.
Yes, it's a very slow rate of burning.
Yeah, it's not total.
And you stop the process halfway through.
That's how they get charcoal. You burn wood with very little oxygen.
With very little air, yeah.
And then it becomes easily combustible material later on.
Yeah, it'll burn straight away.
Yeah, it'll burn up. Yeah, so pachim is charcoal. Yam tzeir hashem pachim, eish is fire. Gophris, very interesting. Gophris is brimstone. So what's brimstone? Sulfur. Yeah.
Oh, Sodom.
Yes, exactly. Sodom and Amorite guys. Gophris. Yeah, in fact, this is Gophris. Well, men love the same kochol atzom. In Nitzavim, where is it? Vayelech. It's Nitzavim. Now brimstone. In fact, I had to look into all of this. Let me just get my notes on brimstone and sulfur. Definition of sulfur. I'm not a scientist. I really had to look into this with a lot of care to understand what sulfur is all about. Oh, here it is. Right. Sulfur is an element.
Yes.
It wasn't thought to be an element until when was this? Until the 1770s. The scientist Antoine Lavoisier. he discovered it was an element. It's found near hot springs and volcanoes and so on. In fact, the word brimstone means burning stone, so that's where it gets sulfur. It's found in almost a solid state, and it's a bright yellow. It's a soft solid, and it's bright yellow in colour at room temperature. And it's used in industry. I've done a whole load of things. So it's written in medicine. It's used as a laxative.
Maybe it was.
Nothing about it. Right. Okay. And as a tonic, it's used in fertilizers, batteries, detergents. I've got a whole shopping list here. In matches, of course, because the. It's coming to that. Because that's relevant to our posse, believe it or not. It's coming up in a medrash. Yeah. I looked into all the science for this to get this. Yeah. So it's used in all sorts of things, batteries, detergents, matches, fireworks, gunpowder, tires, and it's also used in weed killer. And Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate. And those are an exfoliant and also as a bath additive and so on. The major derivative of sulfur is sulfuric acid, H2SO4, which is highly corrosive, isn't it? Yeah, highly corrosive. It can really destroy skin and material and everything. Yeah. So, and of course, it's easily flammable, which is relevant to our pasuk because the Tumah HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending burning sulfur to destroy the Rishayim. Yeah. If you mix sulfur with water, it produces an enormous amount of heat, which can almost boil the water.
Mm.
Yeah. And in fact, it's very difficult to extract sulfur from the ground because of its corrosive qualities and because of its burning qualities. And it took till 1903 a scientist called Hermann Frasch who developed a system of three concentric pipes used in the ground. You insert three concentric pipes into the mine to extract the sulfur, and the innermost pipe contains boiling water, which melts the sulfur, liquidizes it, and then the middle pipe contains some kind of compressed air, which makes the sulfur move, and then the outermost pipe collects the sulfur. So it's a whole complex. It's a dangerous chemical. And then you collect it as a liquid.
Solution.
It's
a suspension.
Yeah.
Solution is like sugar. It just goes in with the water.
Yeah.
Is sulfur like
that? Well, it's not mixed with the water. The inner pipe is only used not to mix with the sulfur. It's only used to heat up the sulfur, and the sulfur is extracted in the outer pipe. That's how it's done. So it's a very interesting.
It's dissolved,
yeah. Wow.
Sodium catches fire in water.
Yeah. So you have this amazing chemical which which is a dangerous chemical and so on. So that's the idea behind the sulfur. I read somewhere that it's more toxic than cyanide. Now, the rotten egg smell, the smell of sulphur, when mixed with hydrogen, gives it hydrogen sulphide, gives off the smell of rotten eggs. And that's going to come up in a medrash. So, watch out for the medrash. Right. Now, let's define still a bit more. Veruach zilophos is a burning wind. That's how most professionals learn it. That's how Rashi learns it. In fact, Rashi
could be a hurricane.
I don't know. It means a hot wind. It means a hot wind, burning wind. That's how Rashi learns it. Hot wind, and Rashi quotes a number of pesukim which tell us that it's a hot wind. The Ibn Ezra learns. The Ibn Ezra learns on this word pachim. He says it's like burning stones which come down from the sky together with rain. I don't quite know what that would be, but some kind of burning borod or something like that. It's similar to what we learned, I suppose, as charcoal.
Which is ruined ash, volcanic ash.
Oh, volcanic ash, could be. The Ibn Ezra learns Ruach Zilophos. Rashi learns Ruach Zilophos is burning wind. Ibn Ezra learns Ruach Zilophos is a trembling wind. A wind that either means it makes a person tremble or the wind itself makes everything tremble, I'm not sure. Now come on to this last phrase, Menos Kosom, the very interesting Lashon here brought by the Ibn Ezra. He says that the word Kosom has nothing to do with a cup. He says the word Kosom, it means a portion. And the root of it is Kaf Samach Samach. And he relates it to the Pasuk in Parashas Bo. Menos Kosi, it's a paraphrase of what we've got here, exactly. Menos Kosi. But I always thought that word Kosi meant a cup. Says the Ibn Ezra, no, it's nothing to do with this. The root is Kaf Samach Samach, and it means to apportion, or to divide something out, to count out a portion for someone. And he quotes the pasuk in Parashas Bo, chapter your base, about the Korban Pesach, Ish lefi ochlo tachosu al haser. So tachosu means, that's the expression of how you have to form your family groups to eat the Korban Pesach. You apportion out the Korban Pesach. You've got to make sure that everybody eats at least a kezias, and you've also got to make sure that the whole korban is consumed. So you've got to check very carefully the size of the animal with the number of people who will be joining you at your seder. And that's tachosu al haser. You've all got to share out this seder. You've got to measure it out. You need to have a minimum of kazais. That's what you need to have. Yeah, minimum of kazais. So tachosu ishtav yachlo, each person according to the amount he can eat, tachosu al haser, you should apportion out the set. Now, in my concordance, he relates kaf samach samach to the shoresh kuf tzadi tzadi. Each one of those three letters is different, but phonetically they're the same. Kaf samach samach, kuf tzadi tzadi, because that's a lashon of kates. Kots, and he relates it to ribis katsutsa, fixed ribis, which is where you charge interest at the start of the loan. You know, you say, I'll lend you £5, you've got to pay me back £5 plenty. So that's ribis katsutsa, where the ribis is fixed, it's apportioned at the very start of the loan. Yeah, so that's I found that word fascinating, menos kosi. Some do learn menos kosom to be a reference to a cup, and we'll see that. We'll see what that is. Okay. So let's go through the pasuk again, and now we've got the definitions, we can actually understand it. This is menos kosom, this is their fitting portion for Rishayim. What is their fitting portion? Their portion is Yam Terah Rishayim Hashem should rain down upon the Rishayim, Pachim, the charcoal, and the ash, and the fire, the gophris, and the sulfur, Viruch Zilophos, and the fiery winds. That is menos kosom, that's their fitting portion, that's what they deserve. So, and again, it might not happen to them until after their life in Olam Hazeh, but that is what is, that's their ultimate comeuppance. That's what they deserve.
Like
Kenan
description,
absolutely,
fire,
absolutely, absolutely. It's exactly it. Yeah, that's the punishment. That's the ultimate punishment. Exactly. Yeah. Now the word menos kosom, very interesting, is actually tautologous, because menos is a portion, and kosom also means a portion. So we seem to have a bit of repetition here. So the Radak points out that there's a pasuk in Daniel, chapter Yud base, pasuk base, where, oh, let me turn this, chapter Daniel, second. Here we are. Yud base, pasuk base, where the pasuk says, Miyasheni admas ofar yokitsu, and many from those who are sleeping in the ground yokitsu will awaken. And they'll be tresemesim. Now admas ofar is a tautology, it's a repetition. Adomer is earth, and ofar is earth. So it means the same thing. So the Radak says, yes, we have this in Tanakh. We do find this kind of tautology. So menosko som is not a problematic phrase. We do find such repetition in the pesukim.
Yeah. Two words for the same meaning.
Exactly, brought together. Menosko som. Mone is a portion, and kos also means a portion. So they come together, like admas ofar. Yeah. A different pshat on the word pachim. We translated pachim as charcoal. The Tosfos read, and I believe it comes from a medrash, and I think I saw the medrash, translates this word pachim as a trap. We do find the word pachim.
Pachmishba.
Thank you.
Hallel.
Is it in Hallel?
Yeah.
Pachmishba v'anachnu nimlotznu.
Yeah.
Is that in Hallel?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's somewhere.
Somewhere anyway.
Hapachnishba, the chap is broken.
Yeah, somewhere.
So Pachem is...
In Shabbos, something,
say. I can't remember where it is. It's somewhere. Yeah. So there we have... So the word Pachem has been a trap. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring traps to these Rishayim. Yeah. Now, the Medrash Sheikha Tov says that he relates this idea of Pachim Eish. He seems to connect these two words together. Pachim Eish. You can call it charcoal of fire or traps of fire, whichever it'll be. He says that anybody, that all Rishoyim over history who have been very conceited are brought down with fire. And I don't understand how all these people, what the proof that all these people have become conceited. But he brings a whole shopping list of Rishoyim. It's like the who's who of Rishus. Dur HaMabul, the Dur HaFloga, the people of Sodom, Paro, Sanherib, Nebuchadnezzar, Sisra, Edom, Gog, Magog, and then he says, and all the other nations of the world, they become haughty, and therefore they are ultimately brought down in fire. That's this Pachimesh, brought down in fire.
Is it the part of the haughtiness? Because the power was water. It must be the fire of their haughtiness.
Could have been brought down by cooling them down with water. Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that. Their haughtiness, the fire.
Oh,
their haughtiness.
Their haughtiness. So that's the fire. It comes out and says midah keneged midah.
And it destroys them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
The Yalkam Yom Lois explains our pasuk as being the sequence in the pasuk is very, very precise. He says as follows: Yamta Arushayim Pachim. First, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings down this charcoal, and therefore, what do all the Rishayim do? They rush indoors. Well, they rush indoors, and the next thing that hits them is. He connects Pachim Eish. Hashem rains down this charcoal of fire, and so therefore for protection they rush indoors. Rushing indoors, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends them the bad smell of gofris, of the sulfur. And so, and that's within the house. So to escape the smell, they go out. And once they go out, then they're smitten by the ruach zilofos, these fiery winds which shake the earth and also pull down the houses. So he says the whole thing it follows that sequence.
No escape.
Absolutely no escape. Now, in the Medrash, and that's this wonderful sefer on the Midrashim. Let me find this. Rav Yudan. Which one is? Oh. Rav Yudan says on this pasuk. Seconds. Yeah, he says, why is it that a person is revulsed by the smell of sulfur? Yeah, and he puts it as a lashon mipnei ma odam miriach reach gofris. Why is it when a person smells sulfur, v'nafsho soledes olav? Soledes is like yatzeledes. You withdraw. Why is that person just can't cope with the smell of sulfur? Why is that? He says, you know why? Because a rasha is punished with sulfur in Gehenna, and it's the nefesh of the person reacts to that because he knows that's what's coming to him, and that's the person's ultimate punishment. And therefore, in life as well, he reacts to the sulfur very dramatically. That's the medrash.
People used to go to the spa bath and drink.
Yeah, like a Harrogate.
Yeah.
I know.
It's ghastly. This thing.
I know. Yeah.
And they would drink it.
Amazing.
I have a drink of white wine.
I don't know.
Well, it's a tonic. It can be. It does have some. It does have some medicinal purposes. Yeah.
I don't think anymore. Yeah. Most of the spas are closed down.
Yes. Yeah. Rabbi Shimon. Oh, now listen. This Medrash, beautiful Medrash here from the Minva Rabbi Shimon Levi. He quotes four pesukim, which all have the word kos in it, and each of them is a punishment for the umas ha'olam. And he says, connected that, we have four pesukim, all of, we have four references to the word kos, which are all rewards. So the four cups of punishment going to the umas ha'olam, and we have four cups of reward. And he quotes the pesukim. Tos Tanchumen, exactly. Oh, Tos Tanchumen.
The abacosus.
Exactly what he says. Exactly. Yes. He's a bit of a shkeich. He says exactly what he says. Reb Shimon Levi. How about that?
Thank you.
Reb Shimon Levi for the day. Reb Shimon Levi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires us to drink four cups of wine on Seder night. Can they get the four cups of punishments which will be meted out to Rishon? And he quotes all four pesukim. I haven't looked at the four pesukim. And we have four references to coast, which are good references. I'll give you those. Hashem Nascheli v'Chosi Atar Tomich Goroli. You are my supporter. You're my supporter. That's one pasuk. It's in Tilim Tezayin pasuk. Hey, we have Tarech Lefanai Shulchan Neged Tzoroi Dishanta Hashem Nureshi Chosi Revoya. My cup overflows. And Tilim Kafkim or Pasuk Hey, and Kos Yishus Esar V'Shem Hashem Ekra Imhalo in chapter Kuftei Zayin Pasuk Yud Gimel. Now that last one, Kos Yishua, with only three pesukim, but Kos Yishuos is a plural, so it counts as a minimum of two. So they have four pesukim of Kos of punishments. We have three pesukim, one of which counts as two. We have four, so we also have four koses of Yeshua, and that relates to the four koses on Seder night. Yes, absolutely. Will I have time to just finish this pasuk?
Sure.
Pity not to. Yeah. Rav Shimon von Hirsch has a different translation. I'm going to read out the translation in English on this pasuk from Rav Shimon von Hirsch. He sends down snares, so he goes with this pshat of pach as being a trap or a snare, like you said, and also as brought in Tosfos Reads. He sends down snares for the lawless, fire and brimstone and wind with exhaustion. He translates Ruach Zil Ophos as wind with exhaustion. We'll see why. Wind with exhaustion on its wing shall be the portion of their cup. Now, the Rav Shimon von Hirsch, in his phenomenal understanding of Lashon HaKodesh, he says as follows. We have the word motor, which means rain, and we have the word geshen, which means rain. What's the difference between the two? Our pasuk starts with Yamter al Rishayim. Yamter, Hashem will cause to rain down. So he says Yamter, or motor, is a general word for anything that comes down from Shammai. Anything that falls from heaven can be called motor, whereas geshen is specifically rain. So Yamter, here we have the verb. Yamter, Hashem will rain down things which are not rain, but all sorts of other things. This word Zilophos, he gives a phenomenal shot on it. He says Zilophos is a contraction of two words. Zilophos. Ophos means to fly. We had it before. Oph, we had it from the derivation of the word afapov, the eyelids which are constantly fluttering. Zil, he says, is from the root Zayin Lamed Lamed, which means to become less, to diminish, or to ebb away, or to cheapen. That's how the word Zol, cheap, is something as cheap as Zol. It becomes less, it's a lower price. So it says, Zil Ophos is an expression of exhaustion. A person's energy has ebbed away from him. Why? It's as though he's been flown through the air. And that's how he translates it. He says it's wind with exhaustion on its wing is the English translation. And that's how he learns it. Zil office means it's exhaustion, where a person's energy has ebbed away from him because it's as though he's been flown through the air. Amazing. Then Rav Shimon von Hirsch goes into this word manos kosam. And he says very interesting pshat. He also says the manos is an expression of that which is a person's portion, and it's related to memnun hei, which is to count. That's when you count out your portion. That's where we get the word minion. And he also relates it to the word mon. The mon was apportioned out. Everybody got their rightful quantity. So that's how he ends up the word mon. Amazing. Never realized. Mon connects to count or to portion out. Then he says, Rav Shimon von Hirsch learns that the word kosam at the end of the pasuk is a cup. not kaf samach samach to a portion, like the Ibn Ezra learnt, but kos meaning a cup. Says of Shem Shem Tan Hirsch, a kos is a cup which is meant to accept your rightful portion, that which is truly yours, is deserving to you, and that is your portion. Menos kos is your rightfully deserved portion. So he says as follows, the Rasha has gained all sorts of belongings, he's amassed maybe great wealth, and it should be rightfully his. And maybe it is rightfully his. Maybe he's entitled to what he has. But what happens to it all is that it all turns bad. And he learns as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns that which is rightfully his into destruction. Yam Terah Rishoyim, Pachim, Eish, Vagafis, Verach, Zelofis, all of that destroys that which is maybe rightfully his. Menos kosam. That's how he learns it. It might well be rightfully his, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu just goes ahead and destroys it all. And he says it's wealth, that the Rosha may well have amassed wealth, but it all turns bad on him. And he doesn't quote this pasuk, but it reminded me of the pasuk in Koheles. Ah, you think you're wealthy, it's just...
And with Korach, you know,
yeah, he also had one as well. Yeah. But there's a pasuk in Koheles, chapter 8, pasuk Yudbeis. Yesh ra'ocholo. There's an evil illness, ra'isi tachas ha'shamash, I've seen under the sun. And what is that? Osher, its wealth, shamur liva'olov, which is kept for its owner, lera'oso, for his bad. That means wealth is not always good. Wealth can be good, but it can also be bad. So there's a certain wealth which is retained for its owner, lera also for his ultimate bad. And the mafreshim on that pasuk say it means like a person might become very wealthy, but then people are jealous of him, and people steal from him, and he undergoes all sorts of horrible things, you know, or he's threatened because of his wealth. You know, people are after his money, so they. Yeah, exactly, all these horrible, exactly, ransom, hell transfer, all these horrible things. Osha Shamaluv Alav Rasa. So he says, Rav Shem Shem doesn't quite that possible. I connect it, it's that possible. He says, this is a person's wealth which ultimately turns bad on him. And he gets it all from the word Menos Kosam, which he says is a person's rightfully and maybe even deservedly earned portion. In the Masad Rav Kook, he brings a totally different shot. He says, on this word, Ruach Zilofers. Zilofers, he says, is the word Za'af. Zayin Ayin Fei, with an extra lamed. Why is there an extra lamed? He doesn't say. But he does say that it's not unknown. And he quotes a posuk in Eov, and it's chapter Kaf Aleph, posuk Kaf Gimel, and forgive me, I don't understand that posuk in Eov, but the posuk in Eov has the word Shal Anan. Shal Anan, and it means peace and quiet. So the word is really Sha'anan, like we say the Shakat for Sha'anan, the in the Harid. It's Sha'anan with an inserted lamed. Likewise here, Zil Ophos is Za'af, which means anger, with an inserted lamed. And that brings us. Oh, 1 minute, hang on. Maybe not. Oh, something which I missed out earlier. Oh, I must say this because it's very close to my heart. And that's on Einov. Just going back to Pasuk Dalet, Einov Yechazu. Where did I see this now? I can't remember where I saw this. Oh, exactly. Now, the Sechazeno Einenu is in the feminine. Sechazeno or Techazeno is a feminine form, like Tishmer No. That extra nun here is a feminine plural. And yet we have here Einov Yechazu, which is a masculine plural. And it's a bit of a kasha, and I can't remember where I saw it now. Oh, I jotted it down. And I've often wondered about this Besechazeno Einenu, which is in the feminine, because in Marv we say Yiru Einenu, which is a masculine plural. Maybe this word Ayin has, maybe the Ayin is sometimes masculine, sometimes feminine, I don't know. Anyway, alright. So that's it, that brings us to Pasuk Zayin. I think, should we leave it there? We've got one more Pasuk to go. Should we leave it there?
Yeah.
I'm happy to finish off. I'll be happy to finish off now if you want. Shall we? Okay, wonderful. Okay, good. I'm only too happy to. Good. Okay. Pasuk Zayin. I thought you'd all be rushing to go. Okay, Pasuk Zayin. Ki tzadik Hashem tzadokes ohi. Hashem is a tzadik who loves, a righteous one who loves righteousness. Yoshar yechazu fonemo. This is very hard to translate. The upright, that's Yoshar, will behold his face. He who is upright will behold the face of Hashem. They'll be rewarded by being allowed a face-to-face meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea. Oh, now, that's how the Mitzvah David learns the Pasuk. Yasha Yechazu Fanemo, you behold his face, you'll have a privilege to stand and before the king, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and see him. Now, the Pasuk says, Ki Tzadik Hashem, God is a Tzadik, Tzadok is Ahiv, he loves righteousness. Rashi learns that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not so much loves righteousness, but he loves those people who do righteousness. So Tzadok isn't the noun righteous deeds, it's the people who perform righteous deeds. That's how Rashi learns. Yeah. And Rashi goes on to say that a different pshat on the last part, Yoshar Yechazu Fonemo, that Yoshar Yechazu Fonemo, the word Yechazu means to see and approve. And it means a person whose face shows approval to uprightness, uprightedness, to people who are straight and good. And Rashi explains that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves A, tzedakos, people who perform righteousness, B, people who approve of yashrus, people who approve of straightforwardness. That's how Rashi learns the Pasuk. So Yosha Yechazu Fonemo doesn't mean, as we said earlier, that the upright will be, people who are upright, who are Yosha, will be rewarded by an audience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, Rashi learns differently. Rashi learns it means HaKadosh Baruch Hu will love those people who are Yosha Yechazu, who approve of, who see approvingly those who are straightforwardness. The Ibn Ezra brings a different pshat in this, that on this last phrase of Yosha Yechazu Fonemo, and it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see and recognize those who are Yosha. So we've got many different pshats on this. It can either mean the human being has this audience with Hashem, and he is rewarded by an audience with Hashem, or it's the other way around, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu recognizes the one who is Yosha. Yeah, interesting that if that is the case, that Yechazu Fonemo, the word Fonemo is a very difficult word, because Fonemo is a plural. It means their face. Actually, it's Machlokes.
Ponim
is a plural, yeah.
Yeah, it's a plural, but it's a singular face.
That's not what we're talking about, right?
No.
But you mentioned this, I have to tell you. There are two words in Hebrew for a face, Ponim and Apayim. That was in the Filas Apayim. And they're both plural words. And the reason why they're plural is because the face is symmetrical.
Yes.
Two halves. The reason why the singular word face is represented in Hebrew by two different words, ponim and apayim. And the reason why it's a singular word, but it has a plural form. Ponim and apayim are both plural forms. Why is it plural? Because a human face and an animal face is symmetrical. Two ears, two eyes. Yeah,
two sides,
two cheeks. Yeah, two sides to the face. So the one side reflects the other. So it has a plurality about it. The face is a plural, is a plural thing. Yeah. Oh, are you all right now? Do you mind if I continue? You gotta go. Probably. Yeah. I'll give you the take. Yeah. No, don't worry. I'll give you the take. Don't worry. Okay. But that's not the point. That's not the point here. Because ponim is a plural, but the suffix mo, memvov, is often a plural form, like asper olemo. What's this week's subject?
Olomo. We often have no. It's a poetic form, isn't it?
It is a poetic form for hey mem. Like olemo is a poetic form of alehem, on them.
But also lomo is often
lomo lohem. Now it can be both. It lomo can be singular to him.
Is it
just bracha?
No, we have fear mehal poron or something. Lomo, fear mehal poron.
Yeah, I can't remember the pasuk now. Yeah, it is lomo. I'm not even writing it down. I think I wrote it down actually. Hang on.
Sure.
I think I wrote it down. Vega. Here we are. Yes, I've got it here. Asper olemo rotos is in Devarim, Lamed Beis Kaf Gimel. This etc. Pashas Hazinu. I see anyone write down. That's better than me, Rose. But you do have the Shasidus Lomo, I think is a possible. I can't remember that. But the word Lomo can mean to him, and it's a poetic form of lo, and it can mean Lohem, and it's a poetic form of Lohem, to them, plural. So it can be either. So the Radak's got a kasha. And the Radak's kasha is, according to his own, sorry, not the Radak, the Ibn Ezra has a kasha, according to the Ibn Ezra's own pshat, that Yosha Yechazu Fonimo means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the face of the one who is Yosha, the one who is straightforward, then why is it in the plural? Yosha Yechazu Fonimo. Fonimo means their face. So we're not going on the plural word ponim, we're going on the plural owners of that face, their face. Why is that in the plural? And the Ibn Ezra answers his own kasha from the Pasuk in Parshas Vayera, where Avraham is speaking to Avimelech and excusing why he got sorrow to tell a lie that they were really brother and sister and so on, and he says Vayihin it was Ka'asher Hisu Osi Elokim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me wander around, to all these different places, so my wife and I have cooked up this plan to, just because my life will be in danger, to cook, we've cooked up this plan and say we're really brother and sister. And the Ibn Ezra points out that word Hisu is a plural. It's not his heir. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is only one. Yeah? We can't bring and the word Elohim, even the word Elohim is a plural, really, of Eloka. Yeah? But we have Bereishis Bara Elohim, which is in the singular. But we do find a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the plural. He can share his u o c Elohim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me run away, wander around, and his u is a plural form.
Why should Hashem's name be in the plural?
It's very strange. Yeah, sure. Bereishis Bara Kim. Why is that? Yeah, it's very strange. I don't know. Yeah. The Ibn Ezra then goes on to say that...
It's fairly obvious in a way. Hashem's name is in the plural. Because he's ubiquitous. He's there. Well, everywhere. Every place at one time. He's got many, many names. So if you refer to Hashem, you can't take one name. It's the many names. It's plural.
Yeah, could be. But it is strange. We're axiomatic to our belief is Hashem Echad, or Shema Echad, and yet Elohim is a plural term. It's strange. It's a bit odd. Yeah. Okay. Many names. Multifaceted. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The Ibn Ezra learns differently. Gives another pshat on Yosha Yechazu Fonemo. He says that what's this Fonemo in the plural? He says it goes back to the word Af Apov in Pasuk Dalet. Af Apov Yivchanu Bnei Adam. Hashem's eyelids discern man. Says the Ibn Ezra, what else will those eyelids discern? They also discern Yoshar, the one who is straight. And Yosha Yechazu Fonemo is a plural word, phonemo, and yechaz is in the plural, because it harps back to the word afapov. Those eyelids discern the one who is Yashar. So it goes back to, all the way back to Pasuk Talis. That's how the Ibn Ezra learns. Another pshat on that. Yeah. Now the Radak mentions this idea that phonemo could mean his face or it could mean their face. Two alternates. And he says as follows. If it's if we take the word phonemo as being his face, like the word ponov, then the idea is that the person who is the Ish Yoshar, Yoshar Yechazu Phonemo, it's the person who is the Yoshar will view Hashem's face. Phonemo, his face, capital H, his face. But it says the Radak, if you learn that the phonemo means their face, then we have a different shot. Then it means that then it's the other way around. Then it's the faces of people who are straight. They will see the face of the one who is Yoshar, i.e. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's that two different ways of looking at that phrase. Is it Hashem looking at us or are we looking at Hashem? So two different ways of looking at it. And the Radak relates it to whether you learn phonemo as being his face or their face. Oh. Yeah. The Meiri learns Sadokas Ohev. Yes. I'll leave that out. I can't remember what it means. Okay. The Yalkut Miam Lois says that tzedakos, the Yagman is tzedakos ahid, Hashem loves righteousnesses. It's a plural, isn't it? Righteousnesses, tzedakos. Why is it in the plural? He says because there's a tzedakah in a person's life, and there's in his heart, and there's a tzedakah in what he does. Basically, there's good in what he thinks, and there's good in what he does. The Sephorno, who learns that the whole chapter is a reference to David running away from Avshalom and the war with Avshalom, he says, what are these tzedakahs that I've done? What are the tzedakahs that I've done? That David says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves tzedakahs. What are these tzedakahs? He says, I did good deeds in the time of this battle with Avshalom. I did good deeds. One good deed was that I did not kill Shimi ben Gera. Shimi ben Gera came out and he cursed me, and I did not kill him. I could have killed him. Yoav wanted to kill him. He left it to Shlomo. But I could have killed him, and Yoav wanted to kill him, and I didn't. So says the Alchemy Amnois, that's my tzedakah. I did a tzedakah to Shimi ben Gera by not having him killed. Likewise, I did another tzedakah in not killing Amosa ben Yeser. Amosa ben Yeser was a nephew of David's, another nephew of David's, so was Yoav, by the way, Yoav ben Saria, but David had another sister whose name was either Avigal or Avigail, I'm not sure, I think it's a Greek Hasid, Avigal, but it's written Avigal and pronounced Avigail, not to be confused with his wife Avigail, a different person. He had a sister called Avigail, who was married to Yeser, and they had a son called Amosa, and Amosa joined Avshalom's army. Avshalom appointed him head of his own army. Later on, David did not have him killed, at least not yet, and in fact, after the war with Avshalom, David appointed Amosa as head of his army in place of Yoav. Yoav had been the head of the army, but because Yoav killed Avshalom against David's express wishes, so David deposed Yoav and appointed Amosa ben Yeser in his place. And with all of that, he says that was another form of tzedakah. I could have killed Amosa ben Yeser. He was my enemy. He had joined Avshalom against me. I could have killed him, but I didn't. I performed a tzedakah there. And another tzedakah that he performed, this is all learning according as the Sephorno learns all the tzedakahs that David did in the course of the battle against Avshalom. Another one was to a man called Barzillai. Barzillai was a man who had been kind to David and had brought David food, and that's recorded when David was in Machanayim on the run from Avshalom. Barzillai brought him food, and that's in Shmuel based chapter Yud Zayin, Pasuk Kav Zayin. And later on, David returned the favor and insisted that Barzillai should be looked after, and he did look after him. And then, if I remember correctly, at the beginning of Melachim Aleph, David instructed his son Shlomo to also look after Barzillai. So the pasuk says v'chilkalo, he looked after him, and that's in Shmuel Beis chapter Yud Tes pasuk Lamed Daled. So the Sephorno learns these are tzedakos ahid. HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the righteousness, and all this chapter deals with the war with Avshalom. Those are the various tzedakos I did: not killing Shimi ben Gera, not killing Amosa ben Yeser, and looking after Barzillai. Now the Menorah Hamo'er, which is a sefer I once wanted to make a chavrusa with David Krasner. We made a chavrusa years ago, and I said to David, let's learn the sefer Menorah Hamo'er, and he said no, more important to learn Mishnah Berurah. And of course he was right.
I've got an English version of it.
Have you?
Someone once gave me it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was translated. Well, the Menorah Hamo'er in Siman Reish Aleph, he speaks there about the mitzvah of giving tzedakah. I must read you this lashon: Had tzedakah she'adam nosi neshem shemayim, tzedakah person gives neshem shemayim b'seiver upon in the office with a good countenance, with a big shmeichel, a big smile, imdivrei nechumin, with comforting words, v'derech chesed, in the way of kindness, v'rachmonus nikris gemenes chasadim. Now, of course, that's gemenes chasadim, and he quotes our pasuk, and he says here, Amr Rabbi Loza, kol ha'uset tzedakah, whoever does tzedakah, ki'ilu melo'o l'chol ha'ulam kol ha'chesed. I'm sorry, I've got the wrong passage there. Sorry, where is this one? Here we are, it's this one here. He says, a person who gives tzedakah properly, with all these things, with a smile and pleasant words, mekav zulche He will deserve to receive Hashem's divine presence. Shenemar ki tzadik Hashem tzedokus ohev yosha yechazu fonemu. He says, you give tzedokah properly, you'll warrant an audience with HaKadosh Baruch
Hu. It's like a poor man.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Giving tzedokah. Yeah. Giving tzedokah pleasantly.
Pleasant, nice,
yeah, the smile is all important. Yeah. The Medrash brings it's also quoted in the Normally Melech on Bereishis, but I saw it quoted in the Medrash that most people like new things. Something chodosh has got a certain appeal to it. Something which is old-fashioned, people are not interested in. Likewise, people who have a certain speciality look askance at other people with the same speciality. Like a craftsman. Like the other guy who's got that. I've got this chachma. How come
you come along? Yeah.
That's like rival musicians and rival craftsmen and so on. Yeah. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is quite the opposite. Ki tzadik Hashem. Hashem is the tzadik. Tzadokah is ahiv. He loves it when other people do the same thing. There's nothing new in it. It's not new. It's old-fashioned. How do we know it's old-fashioned? Because Hashem has already given his own tzedakah. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes this old-fashioned tzedakah that people give, and likewise HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not upset with anyone else who copies him with his speciality of tzedakah. On the contrary, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is delighted with that. Now, the Malbim learns on this pasuk, on that last phrase, Yosha Yechazu Fanemo, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves tzedakah, but it's got to be done Yosha. It's got to be done L'shem Shamayim. And you'll only be Zoche, says the Malbim, you'll only be Zoche to the Madrega of Yechazu Fanemo, of seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu face to face, if you are Yosha, if you've done this mitzvah L'shem Shamayim. You've done L'shem Shamayim. Yeah. Yeah. And now onto some medrashim. The medrash says. Let me get this right. Well, yes, here it is. The medrash says. He quotes it from O Sister Rabbi Akiva. You know, I've never seen this sefer. I've seen it quoted. O Sister Rabbi Akiva, written by the Rabbi Akiva, the Tana, is an analysis of the Aleph Beis. And for example, the very famous phrase that the word MS. Each of the three letters of MS is a solid letter resting on 2 feet. The Aleph rests on 2 feet, the Mem's got a solid base, and the Tof rests on 2 feet. So MS has got raglayim, it's got solidity, it's got a firmness. Where Sheker, the Shin in the Sefer Torah comes to a fine point, and the Kuf is a totally top heavy letter or bottom heavy letter with this sticking long leg, and the Resh is top heavy, isn't it, right? So Sheker's
on one leg.
Sheker's on one leg with a heavy weight leaning over to one side at the top. Yeah. So Sheker is not balanced. Well, where's MS is? That's all comes from Osir Rabbi Akiva. This is not a Hasidic Shavuot. That comes from Rabbi Akiva the Tana. Yeah. Now, in the Sefer, Osir Rabbi Akiva, he brings a medrash that the letter Tzadik approached HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, create the world with me. We heard yesterday from Shalom how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Nelam Hazeh with the hay. But the tzaddik, it seems that all the letters wanted that zechus. And the tzaddik approached Hashem and said, I want that zechus. And the proof is, our pasuk, ki tzaddik Hashem tzedakah zahe, with this emphasis on the letter tzaddik, and the emphasis on the word tzaddik. So I want that zechus. And of course HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, I can't create the world through you, because you are the initial letter of the word tzara, trouble. And quotes Pesukim with that. Yeah. The another medrash that we say, related to the coming week's sedra. We have here in our pasuk we have tzaddik Hashem, ki tzaddik Hashem shahashem is a tzaddik, and also Yoshar. According to the pshatim, that Yoshar, he is the one who is straightforward. And of course we've got the pasuk. It's in this week's sedra in Hazinu, tzaddik v'Yoshar hu. So the Medrash explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very happy to be the tzaddik. He's happy to dish out tzedakah and forgive people from their averus. But he is also a yosher. He's very straight. He's only prepared to forgive if the person comes to him with teshuvah. That teshuvah is the vital ingredient. It's nice and topical for now, just for you on the road. Yeah? That he's a tzaddik v'yosher. Tzaddik yes, he's a tzaddik and he'll give out tzedakah and he'll forgive. But there's a God of Kamtzin, but he's doing it, he'll only do it with yashrus. He's got to be fair. And to be fair, the person has to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu with his own teshuvah. Now, new pshat on all of this is brought in another medrash that Reb Shimon, and I don't know the story, Reb Shimon seems to have been involved in averting some horrendous disaster. There was a gezeirah, seems to be some gezeirah from the Romans, and he managed to avert that gezeirah. And he came home after successfully averting the gezeirah, and he said as follows. He said, he quoted that pasuk, "Kitzadik Hashem tzedak ezahi v'yasha yechazu fanemo." He says, why is it? What is the reason that Kitzadik Hashem tzedak ezahi? Why has Hashem treated us so well and managed to avert this terrible gezeirah? You know why? Because yasha yechazu fanemo, the one who is straight, and he refers to a tzaddik, a human, Yechazu Fanemo, will look at the faces of other people and see what they need. The person who looks at other people and sees their tzoros, when we look at other people and see their tzoros, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacts to us with tzedakah as well, and he reacts to us kindly. So the two halves of the pasuk tying together. Ki tzaddik Hashem tzedakah zahid, if Hashem is a tzaddik and deals with us righteously with tzedakah, because Yosha, because the human being who is straight, Yechazu Fanemo, gazes at the faces of other people in trouble and reacts to their trouble and tries to help them out. And I'll just finish off with one other medrash, and that is that this word Yosha is a source to one of the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Apparently one of his names is Yosha. One of the names of Hashem, Yosha, he's straight. Yeah, we're not surprised, because the word Yosha is the root of the word Yisrael. Yeah, one of the roots of Yisrael. Anyway, Yosha Kel, Hashem is straight. So we have the name of Hashem is Yosha, and we've completed Perk Yud Aleph Baruch Hashem. It's a big thing for me, you know, we're making progress. Progress is slow, but it's a big thing. Every chapter we do is a big thing for me. Shkech.